It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore. Welcome to a special bonus episode. An emergency episode, if you will, because try as I might to avoid this subject, I keep on failing, just like any good New Year's resolution. We simply must talk about Taylor Swift. And oh yes, we need to talk about Swifties. Last weekend, Taylor Swift released her 11th studio album. It's called The Tortured Poets Department, you may have noticed. From the surprise last-minute drop of 15 additional tracks, which turned it into a double album, to the rush of reviews, to the endless and forensic online discourse, it's the kind of pop culture event you just can't seem to turn away from, even if you work your mute button into overdrive. Among the chatter, one review in particular stood out, that of American publication Paste Magazine. The 3,262-word missive drew a huge reaction online, not just because of its scathing narrative and its 3.6 out of 10 rating, but because of how it was presented to the public, running without a byline, withholding the name of the critic that wrote it. As the official Twitter account for Pace Magazine explained, and I quote, "There is no byline on this review, due to how in 2019, when Pace reviewed Lover, the writer was sent threats of violence from readers who disagreed with the work. We care more about the safety of our staff than a name attached to an article," end quote. Cue a minor culture war, with all kinds of opinions volleyed forth from those understanding and lamenting the decision to do this, to those who questioned the integrity and the resultant credibility of the move. Some people even opined that they supported the approach, but they disagreed with the content of the review itself. This was on the more measured side of things. As expected, a much more volatile voice emerged instantaneously, one that we've seen time and again, the Swifties. Taylor's loudest, most dedicated, most aggressive, most terminally online soldiers, who seem determined to shout down and discredit any negative sentiment associated with their golden goddess, even if that means sending threats of violence and intimidation to those wielding what they perceive to be a poison pen. Not every Taylor Swift fan behaves in this manner, of course, and it's important to say that. This, however, is a particular hardcore sect, one that is hard to fully quantify and seemingly even more difficult to combat. But they're out there in their numbers, and they're as tribalistic as any overinvested sports fan. So, let's talk about them. More to the point, let's listen to two people with first-hand insights of their methodology. On this episode of No Encore, you will hear from Matt Mitchell, music editor for Pace Magazine, who took the decision to withhold the byline from Pace's review of the Tortured Poets Department. And you will also hear from Pace Magazine's assistant comedy editor, Claire Martin, who wrote the review of Taylor Swift's Lover album in 2019 that led to her receiving a great deal of online aggression. And again, I can't stress this enough, and just so there's no confusion, Claire did not write the review of the Torture Poets Department from last weekend. That writer remains completely anonymous as of the time of recording. At this point, a reminder that you can get bonus content over on patreon.com/noencore for just €5 a month. Our newly installed album club is up and running over there. You'll also get weekly episode previews and 24-hour early access ad-free episodes of the main Friday show. Patreon.com/noencore if you want to support what we do. And now, without further ceremony, let's get into this discussion, shall we? And you'll hear first from Matt Mitchell, music editor for Pace Magazine. Delighted to be joined now by Matt Mitchell, all the way from Ohio, I believe, music editor for Pace Magazine. Matt, what kind of weekend would you say you've been having?
A very online weekend would be my short answer. It's been busy, but not as crazy as you might expect.
All things considered, yeah. So effectively, if you can talk us through. So Pace Magazine made a pretty unique decision when it came to reviewing the new album from Taylor Swift, that being the Tortured Poets Department, which is out a few days now by the time I'm talking to you. Can you talk me through the decision-making process with regards to the review and what happened and how, like kind of how it all came together?
Well, we published a very long review of Taylor's new record, and it was a pan review, a 3.6 out of 10. And we decided to publish it with a generalized byline with no author name. We used our catch-all Pace staff designation because 5 years ago when we published a review of Taylor's album Lover, and we gave it, I believe it was a 5.8. I might be wrong off the top of my head, but we gave it a lower than 6 score. And the writer who penned that review received various threats of violence online through email in response to it, because they did not agree with what she was writing about. And so there was a lot of backlash to that. It was the first time in Pace's entire time having an office that the doors were locked during office hours. It was just a very crucially unrestful time at the point of that review. And when it came to this, you know, we were talking about it during the week leading up to the album actually coming out. And we were saying, well, we're going to wait and we're going to see what the reviewer has to say about this album. And if it's not a favorable review, we need to have a discussion about whether or not we use a real byline or if we don't, just given because we don't want a repeat of what happened 5 years ago. And of course, you know, the review draft comes in, it's a pretty scathing review. And, you know, we talk to the writer and, you know, talk about like, well, here's what happened 5 years ago. This very well could happen again, because it's 5 years later. And, you know, we all came to the conclusion that we were going to do it anonymously. And the response has been a pretty mixed, I would say. There's been a lot of people who understand the decision and have vocalized just how much they do understand it. And then, of course, there are people who are pretty frustrated with it. They want, you know, if you're going to make it a choice to write a scathing review, you should stick behind your words and put your name on it. And then, you know, there, of course, there are fans of Taylor Swift's music who, you know, want to know who it was who said such, you know, negative things about the album, you know. And so it's been a whole spectrum of responses to such a little thing. You know, when you go into it, you're like, no one's gonna really mind that much that there's no name on this review. It's about the review, not the name. But you can always be proven wrong on the internet, I've learned.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you though. I mean, I think we're always having this kind of conversation about the value of music criticism in 2024. And I mean, like, it's been a conversation we've been having for a few years now. And is it still valuable? I'm curious, given the history, especially with the previous Pace review, did you have journalists saying, I'm not touching that one? Or did you have journalists lining up to want to review it, even with the, whether the anonymity aspect was in play or not? I mean, is this a hard sell now for journalists to even touch this kind of material, knowing what awaits them?
I think it's a hard sell in regards to Taylor's music especially. And I think it's a hard sell in regards to any pop musician who has a following that is a very actively online following. I think Beyonce's fans are similar, maybe not to the extent of threatening people who disagree with them with violence or doxing or anything like that, but there will be records that we get pitched on by six or seven different writers who want to review it. And with the Taylor review, you know, it was no pitch at all. You know, I had to go find someone that I knew could write about it and give them the assurance that as a publication, we would protect them in response to whatever backlash would get. Or, I mean, even if it came in as a glowing review, it's like, we will stick by you, whatever opinion you have on this. And so this was one of the few times in my time as editor for Pace that I had to go find somebody to write about one of the most popular releases in the world, you know? And I think that is a mark of people being a little afraid to touch this material in a way that is not pandering or glowing, you know. I think that and it's a hard time to work through, because, you know, music journalism is crucial, because criticism around art in general is such an important way to consider how you digest art in different ways from your own, you know. And I think that by not being able to put a byline on this record out of, you know, fear of the safety of the person who wrote it, you know, it's like, well, how do we get here? How do we get to this point in 2024? Because, you know, we have not removed a byline from a review. I don't think ever. I don't think Pace has ever done it like that. We do have non-byline stories that get posted, but they're usually either lists that all staff members contribute to. And so it's easier to just say, this is composed by Pace staff, instead of trying to put a byline with like eight writers on it. Or it's just a very generalized news post that it doesn't matter if there is a name attached or not. It's more about the news post. So it's a very rare occurrence, and it often does not happen at our publication in particular. But, you know, it was something that I made this decision as an editor by myself to remove the byline, and I stick by it, because I think that the response to the review itself and the choice to not have a byline is exactly, it's corroborating my decision to do that. You know, I think that, and it's, you can't really predict if a byline had been put on this review, if the response to that particular writer would be worse or better than what it is to how it is right now. But you have to imagine it would be parallel in some way, shape or form. And so, at the end of the day, it's a decision that while it wouldn't be my first choice, I would love to have a writer, you know, get the glory of writing a review that kind of broke the music internet a bit. But at the end of the day, I want them to be able to, like, you know, sleep peacefully knowing that they're not going to wake up in the morning with their personal information online.
Yeah. And actually, just let me ask you real quick, obviously without getting into any specifics, even with the anonymous situation, the lack of byline, have you spoken to the reviewer since this review went live? Are they okay?
Reviewer's doing good. Things are all right. It's, our staff member who wrote the Lover review 5 years ago was getting accused again of writing this, which I found very funny, because I don't think anybody in their right mind who was getting like very targeted threats would take the chance again to write another review of a Taylor Swift album, which is just funny to me that happened, but she's okay too. And I've seen some people getting accused online of writing it who very clearly have never even touched anything of that caliber at Pace. And so that's been a little bit disheartening, but the writer themselves who did pen that review, they're doing fine. Nobody's found them out yet. And I want to keep it that way.
100%. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, like you, before though, you used words like protect and afraid. It is quite a bizarre state of affairs. Like bylines are there for credibility. They're there for responsibility, accountability, transparency, even just to point to your own work. Like they're withheld on very rare occasions. As you say, this is the first instance you can recall of Pace doing it. Like I'm thinking of things like war correspondence or undercover journalism. I mean, arts and culture writing and criticism is supposed to be a much less dangerous arena, even when the reviews are scathing, right?
Yes, of course. And that is a point that I was noticing people making online this weekend. You know, it's absurd that you know, we made an editorial decision that is often like reserved for war reporters these days, you know, people who are, you know, on the front lines of the, you know, Israel-Palestine conflict, you know, getting bylines removed out of fear, you know, keeping their bylines anonymous just so they can feel safe to report on what's happening on the ground in the Middle East, you know? And so it's funny. And it's also a little disappointing that we've gotten to a place where we cannot speak ill of the most popular pop singer's music in fear that we will like have to, the next step to that is navigating an insurmountable amount of online backlash and potentially, you know, life-threatening responses to it. And that has, it's never been as like critical like this as, you know, and it's, I mean, it hurts to watch because you want to be able to engage with any form of art, honestly, and however your opinion flows. And, you know, we brought this writer in to do this review with the caveat of that you might not be able to have any excitement around you being the person who wrote this article. You know, like there's going to be people having negative feelings towards what you wrote. And there's also going to be people who are going to love what you wrote, and you are not going to be able to enjoy either side of that discussion. And, you know, that's a decision you have to make proactively. And I've noticed a lot of people, you know, praising Paste for making that decision. And I feel, you know, and it makes you feel vindicated in a way because other people are on the same level as you. They think that putting the safety of contributors on a pedestal is important. And I'm hoping that as this review continues to hit people in various sectors of the internet, because it's still making its rounds, you know, I'm hoping that people are also kind of getting a little bit of a reality check as to what fandom has turned into. You know, you never want to make a tweet with an editor's note saying that, hey, there's a reason why there's not a name attached to this thing, and here's why. And you know, I hope it's the last time I ever have to do that. You know, I don't ever want to have to come out as an editor and say, hey, I have to protect the person who wrote this review. Otherwise, I'm not doing my job as an editor. Because like, the job as an editor, first and foremost, is to see the piece from a draft to the publication, and mistakes get made along the way with, you know, things get missed. And of course, and you know, there were some, you know, when you're on a Taylor Swift review, you kind of have to rush getting it done and things get lost through the cracks. But the main thing for me in this, as an editor behind this piece, is that I wanted to make sure it got published in a timely manner. And the person who wrote it is, like I said before, safe and sound behind it. And, you know, you never have to worry about that. You never have to worry about making sure that, you know, you're kind of, it's almost like a parental figure at this point, you know, where you're like, I have to make sure that this person who I have employed to do this is nurtured and can like sleep soundly at night, not worrying about what's coming the next day or what people are going to find out in the middle of the night while you're sleeping, you know. And it shouldn't have to be that way. I wish that music criticism was not like that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there was a phrase that you used there. I thought it was really spot on when you said reality check, because I know there's going to be people listening to this who will say, come on, like, you're blowing this out of proportion, but you're really not. That's the thing. And that's been kind of evident and visible online. So I guess you said that the reaction was mixed to the social media post that went out. Can you give me a sense of that? Because, I mean, I've seen other critics from different publications, whether they're freelance or with different, you know, kind of outlets. And I've obviously seen the side of the Swifties who just have this weird, tribalistic, very aggressive response to anything that isn't just incredibly glowing praise. So I'm sure you've been monitoring that reaction. So like, what is your take on that? And what have you seen?
Yeah, it has definitely been the textbook definition of a mixed response to this review. And you hit publish on that review knowing that's exactly what it's going to be. And 9 times out of 10, any review of any piece of media you make, there are going to be people who are like, yes, spot on. Then there are going to be people there are going to be people who say, I don't agree with that. And that's just, that's the point at the core of criticism as it is. You know, it's that it's one perspective on something that millions of other people have different perspectives on. But yes, Swifties have been, by and large, the biggest naysayers of this review. And that is to be expected because it's, I mean, it is a top to bottom critique of Taylor's music, of Taylor as an artist, and it is does not hold back from being kind of honest about how the reviewer feels about the, you know, the entire musicality of Taylor Swift's existence, you know. And at this point, when we are 10 or 11 albums into Taylor's career and she has built this, you know, lore about around her music, that's exactly how these reviews end up being, is they have to consider the full spectrum and the full weight of her music career up until now. And I think that it seems it from what I've seen online, and I've tried my best not to really like dwell on the thousands and thousands of quote tweets on our post. You know, but there has been, you know, Swifties don't like the, you know, the takes being made about Taylor being a billionaire. You know, they don't like making references to her jet usage, you know, and, you know, it's all of it is, there's a lot of irony involved in the response to this review, because you have people lambasting us for doing it anonymously, and the people who are lambasting us are doing it from accounts that have Taylor Swift as their profile picture. There are people saying that they're going to, you know, torch the headquarters of Pace, not realizing that the entire Pace staff works remote. Like there's a lot of things being thrown our way from that part of the internet that at one point, you know, it was a little bit discouraging to watch unfold, but then the longer you sit with it and the longer you watch it just pile and pile on, you're like, this is actually kind of like a Divine Comedy situation, you know, of how hard and how relentless her fans are to defend her name, even though she doesn't know who these people are, you know. And yeah, there's a whole conversation to be had about stan culture and fandoms in general. But the other side of the internet, you know, it's people going into this review level-headedly, or, you know, or people who maybe have been waiting for an outlet to say something disparaging about Taylor's work, and were glad to finally see that be put out on a public forum. And then, you know, of course, there are people who who have the total right to critique the review itself. And I really respect those people who come out and say, who cares if they don't put a name on it? It's a bad review. Like that, you know, that's the kind of discourse that you want to have over pieces like this, is like, well, what is the writing good? Is the point being made, or is, you know, and is, I mean, what's the nuance here? Instead of being like, well, this is a 3.6 out of 10. We should like gang up on whoever wrote this, you know? And I think that, you know, there are multiple sides coming in at this, and it's the epitome of a mixed bag. And it's been educational, to say the least. There was a moment after I hit publish where I said to myself, should I regroup with this writer and kind of reopen the conversation of a byline? Because you know, you always have that second thought when you're going to make an editorial decision of that magnitude. And, you know, I went back and forth in my own head a few times, and then I came to the conclusion, no, let's just do it how it is and put it out there with just underpaid staff. And it became so clear so quickly that that was the only decision that could have been made. That was the only right decision, because for every single person who either liked the review or engaged with the review in a very thoughtful way, where, you know, art criticism is supposed to have discourse, there were 5 to 10 to 15 people who wanted they wanted that writer's name, and they wanted that writer's name for malicious reasons. They wanted that name so they could just, you know, litter the internet with bad things about this person. And to that point, it's like, I will make that. If I ever feel like that is going to be a response to anything that Pace publishes, I will do that. I will make that decision again, time and time again, because I didn't expect the backlash to be so bad, but knowing how bad the backlash is now, that's going to be in the rule book, you know, at this point. And it's horrible that it has to be a rule, you know,
you've got a toxic benchmark on your hands there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny too, because I saw some comments saying like, you know, Pace has always reviewed Taylor poorly, which isn't true. We gave her a 9 out of 10 last year, you know, and we reviewed Folklore very, very generously. Like we've also written, you know, very compelling and thoughtful think pieces about Taylor in the past too, about, you know, like when she was working with Aaron Dessner a lot, you know, that collaboration was bringing a lot of fans in of a demographic that she never had before, which is like 40 to 50 year old men, you know. Yeah. And you know, we've written very favorably about Taylor in the past. And I think that taking the context of a middle ground lover review and this negative Tortured Poets Department review, it has kind of thrown people down this loop of like, well, Pace just hates her. Not the case. We have given her a lot of love and a lot of admiration in the last 15 years of her career. And I think that it takes an outlet who has commented on the good and the bad of her music to really show admiration for her. And that's why I really love Tom Brennan's Stereo Gum article about Taylor Swift that he wrote, you know, as a premature evaluation, where you could tell that he didn't like the record, but he likes Taylor Swift, you know? And I think that outlets that care about Taylor Swift and care about what she can do as an artist are going to not be afraid to publish both sides of the spectrum in terms of praise and panning, because that is just how all artists have to go through it. Bob Dylan has had bad records. Bruce Springsteen's had bad records. Madonna's had bad records. There are every major artist who isn't the Beatles has put out subpar or below average record. And that's okay. It's okay for a musician to miss on a record. And I think that Taylor is bound to miss again. It's probably very likely, but she's also probably going to put out another record in the next 20 years that is one of the greatest records we've ever heard. That's just how it goes. That's how it goes when you are a celebrity of her status and a songwriter of her status. And I think we needed a moment in criticism where we finally just come at Taylor at the level that no one wants to come at her at, which is just, you know, being honest about when she's not on, you know. And she wasn't on the Tortured Poets Department. I love Taylor and I do like this record, but you know, it's not her best.
Yeah. I mean, the irony of all this is that you love Taylor. The irony of all this is that she is critic proof. And it's also quite telling that Tom Breton's tweet with the Stereo Gum review ended with him kind of playfully saying, and I'm so glad I don't have to affix a star rating to this. Let me ask you one last question. So whether it's this situation with Pace Magazine or whether it's Swifties posting kind of weird demonic imagery underneath the Pitchfork review when it doesn't get a perfect 10, because I can recall that happening, it's highly unlikely that Taylor Swift herself, a very, very busy woman, to say the least, it's highly unlikely that she's going to make a post saying, hey guys, let music critics do their thing. Please don't dox them. Please don't send them death threats. But should she, you know, does she bear some sort of responsibility here, given how out of control certain aspects of her fan base seem to be?
You know, it's a question that I think a lot of people the last 2 days have been thinking about as well, because that is something that she has never done and not a lot of artists do. I mean, I think that artists of her caliber and her stature do try to achieve some sort of disconnect from the fans, because you kind of have to. You know, parasocial relationships with artists are a very plaguing ordeal. And, you know, you wonder, like, is it really her job to police her own listeners? And your gut reaction is no, because these are independent human beings who should have the nuance and the wherewithal to know how they're acting online. But on the other hand, you know, she makes music that is so indebted to her fan base and so catered to her fan base. You know, with this record, I was talking to a friend about it recently. I was like, what do you do if you enter this record as your first Taylor Swift record? Because there's so much backstory involved in understanding some of the references on this record. And it just speaks to how much she does care about continuing her own story and giving her listeners a, like, you know, book number 10 or 11 in the series, you know? And I think when you make music that is so conversational with the people who adore you and the people who buy your music and line up and buy a variant of your CDs and your vinyls, there is a little bit of responsibility there, but I don't, I honestly, it would, I would actually not like to see Taylor come out and reprimand her fan base at all, because I don't think when you become a musician, you don't sign up for being a musician with that in mind, that you're going to have to stand on a pedestal in front of your fans and say, hey, you guys got to tone it down a little bit. Obviously, you know, there'll be musicians on stage during performances and they see something going wrong in the crowd and they'll call it out, which I, you know, is always a very powerful thing to watch unfold. But to me, there's still, there's a conversation to be had about where does the line get drawn between what an artist is responsible for and what they're not. And I don't have a, I don't have a particularly good answer, but my initial answer is no, I don't think Taylor Swift is responsible for how her fans respond to a Paste review. I think that, or even a Pitchfork review, I, you know, it's, when, at the end of the day, we have to just have a, we, I think everybody's having their own discussions about what to do about stan culture. And at the end of the day, I don't think there's a really a good way out. I think you just have to wait, hopefully, for these people to reach a point in their lives where they don't feel the need to attack people online for not agreeing with them. And I think, but I honestly, I think the root of that conversation is, how does the internet play a factor into this? You know, I think, because I mean, obviously I wasn't alive in the 60s, but I can't imagine that Beatles fans were threatening the lives of people who did not like the Beatles. I can't imagine that in 1965, that was a thing. Obviously very well could have been. I wasn't alive, so I wouldn't know for sure. But you have to consider how the internet plays a part in all of this and whether or not in the internet has perpetuated fandom to a point that we can't really come back from. And we just have to roll with the punches and figure out ways to combat that. And for now, the way that I, that, that we're combating it is withholding an author's name from an article. Maybe 5 years from now, there will be a better solution. Maybe the next time Taylor makes a record that is not favorable, we'll have a better idea of how to, you know, walk, not walk on so many eggshells. But for now, it's just a matter of we have to do what we can and what we think is the safest and most correct decision at the moment. And that's exactly what we did here at Paste editorially.
Yeah, I guess I'll sign off by saying that, you know, the Beatles definitely inspired an awful lot of devotion back in the day, but that is a conversation for another time. In the meantime, Matt Mitchell, thank you so, so much for this conversation. I found it extremely illuminating. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Appreciate you having me, man.
And thanks again to Matt Mitchell for taking the time. Really, really enjoyed that discussion. And up next, we will hear from Clara Martin, also of Paste Magazine, and her experience of reviewing a Taylor Swift album in 2019 that led to a furious reaction. Thanks again to Matt Mitchell for speaking to me about this contentious issue, of course. And I'm delighted now to be joined on No Encore by the writer in question of the review of Lover from 2019 for Paste Magazine. You were mentioned in the chat with Matt, but they did not mention you by name, filling up to the kind of the protective nature of all this. But of course, this was published under your name back in 2019. This is a previous review, not to confuse it with the current review. You are not the reviewer of the anonymous Taylor Swift missive that went out over the weekend for Paste Magazine. You are, however, Clara Martin, the assistant comedy editor for Paste Magazine, and you also work in the Irish music industry here in Dublin. Can you take us back to 5 years ago? This Taylor Swift album named Lover, an artist, of course, named Taylor Swift, who you are wearing a Taylor Swift t-shirt today in front of me. This review that you wrote and the response that followed.
Yeah, of course. So the reason I wanted to do the review in the first place was like, I feel very ambivalent about Taylor Swift, like, or at least I did back then. I was like, I like some of her songs. I'm not crazy about her. So I sort of felt like, you know, that's a lot of people talking about like the new paced review for the Tortured Poets Department have been like, oh, this is clearly, you know, it's not unbiased or whatever, which we all have biases. But anyways, so I was like, you know what? I'm going in kind of neutral. Good way to be for a review. And my reviews editor, Stephen Edelstone, shout out. He, the day before, was like, your email's in your bio. Take it out before you publish this. And I was like, oh, sure. And I was like, oh, nice. He's looking out for me. But I was not expecting to get hate. And the main reason why is because I was like, I just assumed most Swifties, at least like most diehard Swift fans, would not be reading Paste Magazine. It's, you know, a pretty alt magazine. You know, we cover some pop artists, but that's kind of a newer thing, part of the like poptimism movement. So I was like, okay, whatever. The article goes up. I quote tweet it with "Look what she made me do," which was a dumb joke, referencing what one of the songs from Reputation. And at first there was nothing, and I was like, good, I'm fine. And Swifties don't care about Paste, but I forgot about Metacritic. My score of 5.8 on Lover brought down her Metacritic score. And so then they started coming after me on Twitter. And I remember the first negative one I noticed because it was framed in like a mental health, like concerned kind of way. It was like, sweetie, are you doing all right? Like, you know, like no one who is well would write this kind of review. And I was like, I looked at it sideways. I was like, am I okay? And then all of a sudden, all the hate came in. I was like, oh, this is a lot. So yeah, I just remember that day I ended up crying on the phone to my editor, Steven. What a dude. And my husband made me put my phone down. We went on a walk, went to a bar, and just tried to forget about it. But it was pretty hard to forget about it because my mentions were blowing up. Someone tried to log into my Twitter or my Instagram, I think. So I had to like put on two-factor authentication. And I just got really like emotional anytime I went on the app. Like, I don't know if you have anxiety, but like, it's like I would have the tightness in the chest, heart racing, your head almost feels like detached and like it's floating away. And I was like, I can't handle this. So the Paste social media editor at the time, Annie Black, another amazing person, she was like, just put yourself on private and that's all you can do. Put yourself on private on Twitter. Don't delete your Twitter. So yeah, I did that. And then I just like, I didn't check the app for ages and ages and ages. And yeah, I think after 2 months on private, it was fine. And I like came off private and it was, yeah, I didn't get any more hate after that. So it was very like, it was a very concentrated cycle. But when I did go off it, I wanted to make sure that like these people who were, they were sending like threats of violence. And one of them in particular was like a gif of someone with a knife. And that's just the stuff like on Twitter. I don't know, like I know Annie had to deal with a lot on her Instagram as well. I'm sure that like Paste's email, you know, got blown up or whatever. But anyway, I asked my family and friends to report any tweets that they saw, which was really nice of them. But in retrospect, I think it would be hard for me to see threats of violence made against someone I love. And so I kind of feel bad about having them do that. So yeah, and now it's just a funny story, which now that I recount it, a little bit less funny.
Yeah, there's, I guess, a tragicomedy nature to it, but also it's very real. I mean, to answer your question, first of all, yes, I do struggle with anxiety. But and from my own perspective as a music journalist, I've on occasion, and I do mean on very rare occasions, been quote-unquote the main character on Twitter. But when it comes to people coming after me, the worst I've ever gotten is angry Daft Punk fans. And I must say, it's quite milquetoast and tame by comparison. I don't think I've ever really had threats of violence against me. And I know you didn't encounter these necessarily directly, but where they're death threats sent to people at Paste or anything? Was there, did it ever get to that level of extremism?
Yeah, so wait, actually, let me get up. So Annie tweeted about it the other day because Paste is obviously going through that again. And she was just like, hey, you know, this is what happened 5 years ago. And so she would have been the one dealing directly with a lot of that stuff. And then like my little I feel so bad that I asked my little sister to go through this because she... She also has anxiety, and that probably wasn't easy for her either. Okay, I was on the Pace. Yeah, she was the Pace social editor and can confirm the threats of violence. So threats of violence, I guess you could call them death threats. I don't know.
You did get a, there was a response though to your Twitter lately, because you put up a tweet, nothing to do with anything, and then someone came along and said, you will begin to cough in 13 days.
That was pretty funny, honestly.
13, of course, being the number that's associated with Taylor Swift, and who knows, maybe it's just a gag, but like, I just wonder, I mean, like, it's something, I think maybe some people might be like, well, look, it's hardly that big of a deal, they're just a bunch of kids, but the fact that you said that you ended up crying on the phone to your editor, and your husband had to take you out of your living space and say, let's just get the fuck out of here. That is a genuine intrusion on one's mental health. And people might say, listen, you're a critic, you gave a scathing score, you gotta, you know, you gotta get as good as you give or something. But I think a line does get crossed, no?
Yeah, that is absolutely it. Like, if they were criticizing my writing, my feelings might get hurt, but I wouldn't feel unsafe. And so I think it was the element of, are they going to try to dox me? Are they going to find my Facebook or maybe, you know, like my family's Facebook, something like that? That's what I was really worried about. Because you're right. It's when you're a critic, you have to be open to people not liking your views. And that's fine. But I think those fans also need to face that, like, sometimes people don't like the same music you like. And that's fine, too. And, like, maybe don't send death threats. Like, yeah, it was not cool. It was not a fun time.
But I mean, like, this might be a rhetorical question, but did the reaction steer you away from professionally critiquing art made by certain artists or with notably intense fan bases from that point on?
100%. And I'm like, in a way, they got what they wanted, right? Because it's like, I'm never reviewing Taylor Swift again. But I would much rather have my mental health than, prove a point against a rabid fan base. It definitely changed how I engage with, large scale artists, but specifically Taylor Swift.
It's kind of like a no-win game unless you are automatically coming in with a praiseful review. And you didn't. I mean, it's not like you came in with an axe to grind. As I said, you are literally wearing a Taylor Swift t-shirt in front of me right now, and this is an audio medium, so you're not trying to, like, you know, like, gain favor with the Swifties who might be listening. So it's not like you were, like, rubbing your hands together, like, I'm going to take this down, it's going to be fun. You went in as a critic should do, which is to meet the art in front of you, assess it as you see fit. And also, like, it wasn't even, like, it's a middling review. It's more of, like, it's, like, the current review for Torture Post Department on Pace is much more scathing by
definitely
comparison.
Definitely a pan, yeah.
But, like, just this kind of, this culture of, you know, the critic can only speak if they're a cheerleader, you know, for our favorite artists. Like we want our team to win. I just find it absolutely baffling.
Well, and it's just misunderstanding what critics do. It's like, okay, well, what you're talking about, what you want is essentially journalism as PR, which is a lot of journalism these days, unfortunately. I don't know if you noticed, but some Swifties tried to add a community tag to the Pace review on Twitter saying something like, this is, you know, it's not unbiased and it's full of opinions. And it's like, that is what a review is. And I think, honestly, even like when I started writing music reviews, so like I used to read the AV Club religiously as a kid. And I'd be like, okay, anything that has an A, I'm going to listen to that. And I bet it's going to be great. And now that I'm a critic and I have to assign scores to stuff, I'm like, that shit is so arbitrary. And yeah, I gave Taylor Swift a 5.8. But I still think if I had bumped it up to like a 6 point something, they would have hated it. Pitchfork had theirs today.
Today, literally as we speak, I mean, they put out a 6.6 and I think a 6.0 for like the double album or something. And that's not good enough. Sure, even like I said it before, but like there was a Taylor Swift album review that didn't get a perfect 10 or something. And, you know, the Swifties went crazy. Beyonce didn't get a perfect 10 and it's not enough, you know. But it's like, but it's a positive review. Like it's just, they don't care about the words on the page. They care about the score. And it's that kind of, it's scoreboard journalism, which is just insane. And I'm like you as well. I think star ratings used to kind of mean a lot more to me now. I'm spending more time within that world and assigning them. It is arbitrary, as you say. And even like, I've had people say, well, how can you give that film 4 and that one 4 as well? And I'm like, well, they're not the same film. It's not the same 4. It's not the same score. We're too obsessed with, as you say, you know, oh my God, you're bringing the Metacritic score down. I remember that I reviewed a Jesse J album of all things back in, I know, right? Me, like reviewing. I know, it's like professional critic. I like pop music, but I gave a very bad review to a Jesse J album and I had some of her fan base coming after me on Twitter saying I was bringing the overall score down. And it's like, why does this matter?
That's it. It's like, you are enjoying the art. Why do you have to have, some sort of number to point to be like, she's the best artist? I think that's
It's pure tribalism. It's so baffling. So what did you make of Pace's decision to anonymize this review when you learned of it, like given the experience that you had?
Super supportive. Like, I'm very happy that they did that. And I just want to say, like, between the Tortured Poets Department review and my review back in the day, like, I think the Pace team have been great about all of it. Like, they just really care about their writers and their staff. And it's evident from, you know, what they do to protect people and to also make sure that, you know, this writer still got to have their opinion shared and, you know, yeah, not feel unsafe, which is good.
What needs to change, or is the situation completely out of control? Especially because you're like when you were saying that, you know, they've won because they've silenced you, which is just,
terrorists won.
It's crazy. Like, it's such a sad reality. But if you are in a position, if a critic is in a position where they feel genuinely unsafe reviewing a pop album, if it's gotten to this level, like, what can we do?
Yeah, I don't. Okay, so I do wish that Taylor Swift would say something. I don't know if it would necessarily speak to her most rabid fans, but at least she would have tried. But she's never said anything about her stans and the way they treat people. And I think she kind of likes it that way. That's obviously me projecting, but I think she kind of likes that she has, you know, this fan base that will protect her, quote unquote, at all costs. And yeah, that's super fucked up. I think she should say something, number one. Number two, though, like, this Taylor Swift and, like, Beyonce, they're the closest we have to monoculture right now. And so, like, it's kind of fucked up that the only, like, really wide releases that, like, everyone knows about Beyonce coming out, everyone knows about Taylor Swift coming out, that they come with this baggage. And I don't know that there's much we can do to change it. I think artists speaking out is one step, but, like, as far as, like, the rest of it, I mean, what? Nothing's going to happen on Twitter because it's X now, and Elon's reporting system is shit. And I don't think the people who are making those threats are, to quote the person who first, like, tweeted negatively at me, they're not well. Like, I don't think you threaten, like, death over your favorite pop artist thing if your life is going great. And maybe that's something that's, like, more tied to mental health and people who feel lonely and they find community in stan culture. There is a religious element to it, right? They look up to her, they call her mother, whatever. And I think people find community there. But unfortunately, part of community is that there has to be an other. And the other is the person who doesn't agree with you, doesn't love the artist. So I think just, like, that's, like, a bigger societal thing, though, right? That we can't fix that overnight.
No, and it shouldn't be in the critics' resolve to have to do that. I mean, I know people like to say that critics don't add value. I disagree. I think criticism is about meeting the art and developing conversations around it, good or bad, whether you love it, whether you hate it, or whether you find it middling. And there's nothing worse than something being middling. And it's that thing as well where it's like, we don't quite know the makeup of the stands. We don't know if this is, like, a 13-year-old who simply does not understand that, you know, a casual threat of violence that you actually don't mean, but you're putting it out there into cold, hard text, will be perceived by the person on the other end as potentially something very scary, or if it actually is a grown adult who just thinks that this is fine, this is okay, and social media has taught me that this is fine. But it feels like a very kind of corrosive issue that isn't going away, and I would hope that there's no escalation of it. And I think it's interesting as well, I guess last point, I mean, in terms of the review that Pace put up, because there's been a bit of debate, you know, away from the Swifties, there's been a debate amongst even critics I've seen saying, well, this is a very sad state of affairs, but we understand why. But other people have said that maybe the review then lacks credibility and integrity if there isn't a name on there. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think I understand, like, why they have that criticism. But I'd say that the Pace brand, I guess, as far as a magazine goes, it has a good reputation, and I think it would have a shittier reputation if it put its journalists in danger. And so I think they did the right thing. And, you know, I guess it depends how you measure credibility. But if you measure credibility in terms of looking after your staff, they're pretty great.
Claire Martin, thanks so much. And my thanks again to Claire Martin and earlier to Matt Mitchell, both of Pace Magazine. Go online and check them out. And yes, this is very much a thorny subject and one that has many, many strands. It's quite labyrinthine. I thought we got into it a fair bit on this one, particularly with regards to this current episode and kind of, I guess, the conversation around music criticism and fandom that is currently circulating. We will talk more about the Taylor Swift album and reaction to it this coming Friday on the show with my guest. But until then, my name is Dave Hanratty. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. It's patreon.com/No Encore if you want to support the show and get bonus content. And we're back very, very soon. Take care.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.